Nightlife. Bite-sized history.
Now, I'm not the first person to do this, I'm sure, but I'm going to have to introduce my next story by referencing Barry Manilow and saying that her name was Lola, and she was a showgirl. I wonder whether you're familiar with the story of Lola Montez, the Irish-born dancer who shocked audiences on the Victorian goldfields with her infamous spider dance in the mid-1850s. Well, if you're not, you're about to meet a woman who was far more than a showgirl. In fact, she was a player in European politics in the 1840s before circumstances sent her and her spider dance looking for audiences around the world. Now, to introduce her, historian Professor Claire Wright joins me. Claire is professor at La Trobe University and also is the author of a paper on Lola Montez called A Lover and a Fighter. Claire is also the author of You Forgotten Rebels of Eureka and You Daughters of Freedom. So, Claire, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Hi, how are you going?
I'm very well. Tell us about Lola Montez. Where did she come from?
Lola Montez, well, what a woman. Lola, as you suggested, was born in Ireland despite
the name,
considering herself and claiming that she was a Spanish dancer. She was born Eliza Rosanna Gilbert in 1821, possibly in Limerick, but there are a lot of elements of her life that are fabricated. But there's no doubt that she was of the Anglo-Irish establishment. She was well born. She was well educated, but she was always a tearaway. She had a wild temper. She was known to be arrogant and entitled. And at 16, she was betrothed to a horrid old man who's part of the Anglo-Indian establishment in the British Army, and she defied her parents' wishes and she eloped at the age of 16.
That's right, this bloke was a 60-year-old judge of the Supreme Court of India.
Jeez. That's right.
That must have seen a most unenticing prospect for a 16-year-old girl.
And Lola was having none of it. I mean, that was a reasonably common thing to do, to marry your daughters off into something that was considered to be good circumstances for them. But Lola was not consenting of this arrangement. So she nicked off. She became engaged and eloped with this young lieutenant. And they did go off to India together and they lived for 5 years. But it didn't work out with him, as it subsequently didn't work out with very many people in Lola's romantic life. You could say she was very unlucky in love.
How and when did she learn Spanish dancing anyway?
Well, it seems sometime after this. So she's around 20, 21, and she comes back to Ireland and she starts to dance and she goes to London and then she goes to Paris and she starts dancing on the Parisian stage.
Hang on, is this a respectable occupation? Surely not for a reasonably well-born girl, or had she fallen into disgraced circumstances by this stage?
Well, it's unclear whether her circumstances were disgraced financially, but certainly she disgraced herself by becoming not only a dancer but a courtesan.
Uh-huh.
So, a courtesan is a polite term, an historical term, for a woman who generally made her living by sleeping with very rich men.
Was it prostitution or was it something else?
It wasn't common prostitution. It wasn't street walking. It wasn't working in a brothel. But the term for it at the time was that she paid men favours. So they paid her money and she paid them favours. And this was the way that Lola worked her way onto the world stage. So she's in Paris and she starts to fraternize with a very high class bohemian entourage. She becomes the lover of Franz Liszt, the composer. He introduces her to Georges Sand, the author, and in turn she meets Alexandre Dumas, very famous people in the French literary and musical high culture scene at the time.
Yeah.
And So Lola now is combining her dancing career, and it must be said that there she gets some terrible reviews. She was never a good dancer, but she clearly was a good operator and a good networker and a great talker and highly intelligent and an intellectual as well. And so she quickly moves from this sort of high artistic cultural scene into much more dramatic political scene. And by 1846, she's in Munich, and she is the lover of King Ludwig I of Bavaria. So she goes from
How does she meet someone like that? Because you can't meet them in a bar, can you?
No, but you meet them by being connected with these very, very high-class people, and it's suggesting she was a courtesan to some very rich and influential men. And it is through these kinds of networks, you know, how does anybody meet anybody? You know, it's a kind of version of the Melbourne Club club. Like, you hang around in the right lounges. Might not be a common bar, but you hang around in the right lounges, drinking with the right people, and you soon make the connections that are going to promote your career and your aspirations and your ambitions. And there's no doubt that Lola had all of those things. But what she obviously also really had was a great talent for politics. And this is what King Ludwig saw in her. And she very quickly became the power behind the throne in many ways. She was very influential, and she started to influence the ways in which he was going about his business in court. As I suggested before, she was Anglo-Irish. She wasn't an Irish Catholic, and she was very much anti-Catholic. And this helped her in this moment, which was verging towards democracy or these democratic leanings. She was anti-clerical, anti-Jesuit. She was a liberal. She was a Democrat. And this really stirred things up in late 1840s Germany. And some of your listeners will know that 1848 was known as the Year of Revolutions. Mm. This democratic uprising across Europe was happening, and she got caught up in that.
So she had to flee Bavaria in the end, and she got married again. That was another disaster. So this is when she decides to embark on a touring career as a dancer, and she gets to California. Now, yes, in California, she develops the spider dance. What exactly was it?
Okay, so she has to nick off quickly from Bavaria because King Ludwig, under her influence, abdicates. She's no longer in favour. She loses her countess status, and she's out of there. And via Austria, Switzerland, London, she gets herself over to America, and she arrives in 1851, right at the height of the gold rush in California. And there's a lot of work around for dancers on the gold fields. And she finds herself out there quite quickly. And she develops this dance called the spider dance. It becomes her signature dance. And it's basically a version of the tarantella. And the tarantella is a traditional dance found in many European countries. But she takes it to kind of new heights, and I use that term quite literally, where she's pretending that there are like spiders crawling up her legs into her skirts, these voluminous 19th century skirts. And she starts flacking them all around as if she's trying to flick the spiders out of her skirts. And in doing so, she raises them above the level that would be considered modest.
So she lifts her skirt up.
She lifts her skirts up.
That's right. That's the attraction of the act. I get it. All right. She'd been the lover of a king. Now she's kind of scraping the barrel a bit here, isn't she? Did she have a sense that she had fallen rather low or not?
No, Lola never had a low opinion of herself in any regard. She was a pick yourself up, dust yourself off kind of a lass, and she went with the circumstances. And the next thing for Lola was to follow the tide of gold after the Californian rushes start to die down. The next great surge of humanity is coming towards Australia, and this is where Lola intersects with our own colonial history, because in 1855, Lola joins the tide of humanity that is washing up on the shores of Victoria as part of our gold rush here. And again, we have these extraordinary scenes in our gold rush communities, these topsy-turvy, upside down periods of social flux where Jack is as good as his master and Jill is as good as her mistress. And these are times of extraordinary opportunity for women, something that I outlined in great detail in my book, Forgotten Rebels of Eureka. And this is precisely the time at which Lola arrives. She comes just after the Eureka Rebellion. She arrives in June 1855. She goes out to the Ballarat goldfield, the Castlemaine goldfield. She plays to rich people, newly rich people in Melbourne, and she not only now is dancing her famous spider dance, in which the miners on the goldfields are throwing gold nuggets at her, but she's also written a play for herself called Lola in Bavaria, in which she is essentially what we'd call this now is memoir. It's a kind of theatrical memoir in which she has such a great sense of the life that she's led, the role that she's played in history, the importance that she's had as a player on the world stage, that she invites people to join in her story, and she's creating her story as she's narrating her story. It's all very meta.
I'm talking with Dr. Claire Wright. Claire's an historian at La Trobe University, and we're talking about the life and times of Lola Montez, who you've probably heard of in a vague sort of way as a cabaret dancer of the 19th century. We've traced her steps to the Victorian goldfields. One reviewer of her was Harry Seacamp, who was the editor of the Ballarat Times. Tell me what he wrote about Lola and how she responded.
Yeah, so Henry Seacamp, editor of the Ballarat Times, who had been arrested and tried for sedition during the Eureka uprisings. He's back in Ballarat after having spent a bit of time cooling his heels in Pentridge, and he's back editing the Ballarat Times, taking back the editorship from his wife, Clara Seacamp, and he writes a bad review of Lola's dancing. As I've suggested, she collected bad reviews wherever she went around the world. She wasn't a great dancer. But Lola had very high ideals of herself, and she wasn't afraid to announce these. And she actually confronted Henry Seacamp in the streets of Ballarat after he published this bad review, and she horsewhipped him in the streets. And it's a scene that now gets played out. If you go to what's it called, Sovereign Hill in Ballarat, and you see the sort of sound and light show about the Gold Rush times, there it's a set piece, Lola Montez horsewhipping Henry Seacamp. What you don't see is actually the aftermath, which is that Henry came back after her and gave her a terrible beating, and she wore a black eye for a month. She stayed in a hotel room back in Melbourne. There's a famous musician who comes and sees her and visits her at the time, and he writes his memoirs later. And it was there that I discovered that Lola had taken this beating from Henry Seacamp, and this musician finds her in there, lying out on a great white leather divan, surrounded by animals. She traveled with a zoo worth of animals. She smoked cigars and cigarettes. She had tarot cards rolled out. So she wasn't exactly licking her wounds. She was still having a high time of it, but she was waiting for her facial bruising to go down. So it's kind of become part of the myth and legend of the goldfields of Lola Montez horsewhipping Henry Seacamp. But less well known is the fact that he gave her a good thrashing back.
She's gone down in history as a seductress, the embodiment of the femme fatale. But this is probably the usual sexist way that women who stand out are often characterised, aren't there? Is there a better way, do you think, of remembering her?
Yeah, well, this is a view that I've been trying to propagate, that I think it's we have to look at ourselves as Australians and the way that we have absorbed Lola Montez into our history, rather than teaching about her as being this extraordinary political player who came to Ballarat and was part of a movement, a global movement of people around the world at this time who brought all sorts of ideas to the goldfields, including ideas of democracy, and that's what we think of when we think of the Eureka Diggers. We have Americans who are coming around this time and propagating ideas about republicanism. We have suffrage advocates who are starting to talk about this radical idea called universal suffrage and votes for women. This is a time where there is all sorts of social and political flux, and Lola plays into that, and she performs political theatre here. And yet the only way that we have remembered her in our social imaginings, in our historical consciousness, the way that she's represented in theatre, in posters, in all sorts of other kind of memorabilia about the time, is as this high-kicking showgirl, basically a sexualized version of what women at the time were capable of and what were known for. Whereas, you know, funnily enough, my German-born and educated stepmother, when I mentioned to her that I'd been researching Lola Montez's life, she said, oh, the lover of King Ludwig, the woman behind the throne. Now, she had learnt in her German schoolgirl history about Lola Montez as a political player.
Yeah.
But if we learn about her at all in Australian history, it is as this kind of quasi-prostitute.
Oh, well, that's right. We have to have a box to put women in. That's right, exactly. And that's what happens, doesn't it?
And it ends up downplaying all women. This is one of the problems
of course,
is that it ends up making that box in which all women in history can fit just so small and so confining, rather than expanding our notion of what women at the time were possibly doing, what influence they were possibly exerting,
given the options that were open,
the opportunities that were open to them at the time.
Exactly. Interesting, fascinating, Claire. Terrific to talk with you. Thank you.
It's been terrific. Thanks for the opportunity.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.